After a two-year break, we are back, sharper, bolder, and more committed than ever in telling the stories that matter. This comeback episode opens with a riveting two-voice monologue that lays bare the devastating malnutrition crisis unfolding in northern Nigeria. We then dive into an eye-opening interview with a frontline health worker leading the charge to save the lives of hundreds of thousands of children suffering from acute malnutrition. I'm Ahmad Selkida, the executive producer. Your hosts, Salim and Selma, are here to guide you through powerful, thought-provoking episodes in the weeks and months ahead. Don't miss a single moment. The crisis room is back, and it's essential.
In the vast silence of northwestern Nigeria, a crisis is spreading, not quietly, but unheard. It creeps into homes, into cradles, into futures. It is called malnutrition.
Since 2021, places like Katsina have fought to hold the line, but the numbers have only risen. 3 million children are malnourished in just 3 states, 800,000 in severe acute malnutrition. This isn't just a humanitarian emergency. It is a generational catastrophe.
In Mashi, 1 in 3 children suffers from wasting, and in Katsina town, the capital, 9% of children are facing severe acute malnutrition and 24.5% global acute malnutrition. These are not statistics. They are dreams dissolving before they are ever formed.
Because hunger doesn't only shrink the body, it shrinks the brain. Starved brains can't grow. Nerve cells die, synapses slow. Thoughts crawl where they should leap. A child meant to learn, lead, innovate can barely focus.
And so, the future is altered, quietly. A malnourished child becomes a struggling adult, less productive, harder to teach, more vulnerable to poverty, more likely to raise another hungry child.
And the cycle spins. One child at a time, until whole societies stall, until poverty becomes policy, and underdevelopment becomes destiny.
MSF opened its first centers in 2021, and by 2024, they were overwhelmed. 100,000 children treated, 23,000 hospitalized. Hospitals are overrun, clinics are turning children away.
In July 2024 alone, 20,000 children were admitted for severe acute malnutrition. By 2025, the numbers surged again. Hospital admissions are up 38%. Outpatient visits are up 52%. And still, only 40% of the children affected by severe acute malnutrition in Katsina are reached.
In some local government areas, only 6.5% of children get treatment. How do you grow a generation on those odds?
Yet, the funding is vanishing. UNICEF can't supply enough ready-to-use therapeutic food, RUTF. MSF cuts ambulatory therapeutic feeding centers from 8 to 4. Clinics open once a week. Thousands of children are left behind because the sachets are limited.
By the year's end, 400,000 children in Katsina will need help, but supplies may run out by July. RUTF, the one thing that saves them, will disappear, while their bodies will disappear with it.
And the West debates funding. While 60% of the Northwest depends on nutrition support, if the funding fails completely, 500,000 children could go without care.
And a brain lost to malnutrition is rarely recovered. It is the loss of a teacher, a doctor, a farmer, or an engineer. It is the quiet collapse of a country's future.
MSF still stands with 500 staff, ATF centers across Jibia, Mashi, and Katsina. 1,500 children are treated every day, but the needs have outpaced the means.
This is a call, not for pity, but for action, because we cannot afford to let this generation vanish. Not when every child we save is an entire future we protect.
Feed a child today and you ignite a mind. protect their brain and you unlock a future. Let malnutrition win and you doom a nation to crawl behind the world.
No country rises
when its children fall.
Welcome back to the Crisis Room. In today's episode, we're speaking with Mr.
Sulubala Dobosun, the project coordinator for Medicine South Frontier in Kasuma.
We'll be discussing the malnutrition crisis in northwestern Nigeria, where over 3 million children are reportedly malnourished. Mr. Dobosun shares insights into the challenges MSF faces on the ground and the resource constraints in managing these malnutrition cases. Let's dive into the conversation. Mr. Dobosun, what are the most urgent challenges you face on a daily basis while responding to the malnutrition crisis in communities like Mashi and in the Northwest region?
Thank you. To be a bit more precise, we are, of course, in the Northwestern region, but specifically in the state of Katsina, working in the three local government areas of Mashi, Katsina, and Jibia. And with respect to your question, the most immediate challenges for us is the overwhelming number of children that we are receiving in the program. We are, at the moment, receiving at least 2,250 children per admission in the stabilization center, which we call ITFC. And that means internal patient therapeutic feeding units. We are receiving 2,250 children, and that is extremely high for us because it is constantly challenging our capacity in terms of planned resources to address the quality of care that we need for these children. And also in the ATLC, which is the ambulatory feeding center, we are receiving at least 15,500 children on average per month. And that is just in the two last months, which is April and May. And then that is not even talking about the peak. So when we talk about the number of children, the sheer number of children is our immediate challenge because it's constantly overwhelming us. It's constantly pushing us to adapt ourselves, to adapt the resources to be able to address them. But more importantly, also we find that with this current trend, it is quite complicated because the available resources on ground is not matching to the needs. And that is extremely worrisome for us because unless something is done to make sure that there is equal resources to meet the needs that are on grounds, those available few actors will be severely overwhelmed, and that can only increase the catastrophe of this malnutrition.
Okay, thank you, sir. We know that malnutrition is really terrible, especially among children. So can you describe how malnutrition is affecting not just the bodies, but also the minds and the future of these children that you treat?
Okay. Thank you very much. How does it affect the minds of children? First, coming down to very basics, malnutrition, in a sense, is something that's depriving the body of the relevant nutrients to survive. Yes. In the case of children, we know that the growing of children is most important during the period of birth to the first 5 years, where a lot of the developmental process, which is motor neuromotor, if you know that this is about movements, and also cognitive development, which is about interacting and stimulating intelligence. These things are severely impacted by malnutrition because the children lack the necessary food, and we say food is balanced diet to be able to develop in these two very key developmental aspects. That said, these children also are most generally impacted by poor immunity, immunity being their capacity to fight against infections. So if we put this together, they're having developmental delays in motor as well as cognitive, and also they are very much prone to a lot of infection. For the future, you can imagine that they are the ones who are contracting the most sickness fast, and they're getting the worst sick most of the time. And if you take into account measles, for example, meningitis, for example, that has severe impact on the brain of a child, and those can lead sequelae or impacts that can seriously affect their intelligence in the future. And also, they are very slow. You find that they are not going to school on time or according to the age range with their age mate. So we say it has a very serious impact because it's delaying motor development. It's also delaying cognitive development of the children, as well as exposing them to the severe form of every form of infection that might come. And that in itself can affect their ability to learn in the future, as well as to be productive citizens. And that's why we find a lot of people born and grown in malnutrition that can do nothing other than manual works or farm works, because they have not the intelligence to compete with other people who are better nourished and more intelligent. So talking about the future, this is what we can summarize on that topic.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much for your responses. And my next question is also going to take us back to the first question where we asked you what's the challenge that you have right now. And you mentioned it's the sheer number of children. So currently, with resources stretching and international funding declining, how do you decide which children to treat and which to, well, what is the priority in selecting which children get treatment and which do not?
All right. I first speak as MSF. In our programs, in all and every of our programs, we have a set criteria that allows patients to benefit from the services. And in Katsina, this criteria, once they are set, every child that merits or falls within this category will not be denied care regardless of the number of children. So the sheer number of children can challenge the day-to-day management of cases, but we are not turning people around based on the number of children. We are not making choices. Our only choice is based on the criteria. That is every child that is malnourished based on what we have said. So in order to also better address this problem, while we're still talking about us as MSF, we have even adopted the protocol we call the simplified protocol, which is diagnosing children only based on the measurement of the middle upper arm as well as the edema. So that has allowed us to even enlarge the number of children that we can treat. Because previously, we were only treating severely malnourished children, but today, we are also including moderately malnourished children. And that is with an objective to even be able to capture a lot more children earlier than we could normally do with a standard program, and enabling us to prevent more complications. Now, that is talking at MSF, but also we acknowledge our limitations in terms of finite. So as we said, Katsina has at least 30 plus local governments, but we are only operating in three of them. And in these three, we are supporting five facilities and two other facilities for inpatients. So you can imagine that we are touching the very top of the iceberg. There are many more needs in places that we are not. And while we are able to address the need of those places that we are working for, those children that are reaching us, there are those places that lack the capacity to address their need. And that is our concern. So if we are making a choice, we have decided to work in a particular context, but how about those places where there is no one? And that is why we are doing our best to communicate, to work with the government, to make sure that the situation of malnutrition in the state is well known across Nigeria and across as well the world, so that more people can come and contribute to make sure we have the resources that are adapted to addressing the need in the states.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay.
That was very detailed. Thank you, sir. So what impact does the insecurity and climate shocks in the region have on your ability to reach and treat malnourished children?
All right. I would like to look at this in two different ways. First is the cost or the contributing factor to the presence of malnutrition as it relates to insecurity and climate shock. We know that insecurity is one factor that is preventing the majority of the population who in themselves depend almost 100% on cultivating their feed to get the resources relevant for daily survival. And then climate shock in the other way is also contributing, because even if they're doing their farms, they're doing their cultivation, they are not getting enough harvest that will be translated into financial resources or revenue that can help them to address other needs. So that's there. Those two factors are yet contributing to the very situation of creating malnutrition in the states. Now, about access, that also can be explained by, even if we are not able to go to the patients. That's the number one, because we could go even further. But because of insecurity, we are not sure that we can access everywhere. And the facilities that are working, the facilities that are within the areas of operation are not all open. Because of insecurity, most of those facilities have been closed, which means that healthcare access has been taken further away from the population. So this is how I would look at it. That means that access is not only based on people coming to us, it's also being able to go closer to them. And that has been severely compromised because most of the facilities that are closest to the population have been closed. And I'm actually describing the region in which we are working, the zones that we are intervening. They have been closed. That means very selected and far positioned facilities are the ones that are accessible to patients. So making a choice, number one, is about the distance, which is also affected by insecurity, and then the resources to even travel to the centers for care. So yes, it is a serious impact on access, not because everywhere is closed, but because people can't easily afford to come to treatment and they are very far from there. And this put the population in the situation of having to make a choice, because most of our families here also have quite a lot of children at home. And a single malnourished child would have to be a priority over the 5 or 6 others who are at home. And those decision makings usually take a while. And that is why we have people coming late to the facility with very complicated cases that are hard to manage. And sometimes these children are also dying. So I can answer by saying that this is the basic contribution or impact of the climate change or the climate shock, as well as insecurity on the access to services. It's a longer distance for the population. It's a hard choice to make. And it's a more financial burden, money that they cannot easily get because they are not able to produce food again, that is translated into financial resources.
Hans, thank you very much for your response so far, sir. That's very insightful. So for our final question, from what you have witnessed firsthand working directly with these people and with these children, what would you say to donors or the international community watching this crisis from afar?
This is, I think that we could do a lot more, and the sooner we can respond, the better. We could yet avert another catastrophe, because at the moment, let's say we are getting about 3, on average, 3 children dying today in the program. And that is not for the lack of quality care. It's just for the fact that they are not coming on time, and just based on all of the factors that we have discussed, the distance, the lack of resources, the insecurity. If at all we have a lot more people that are available and they are reaching to the length and breadth of the states, to the population level, to be able to contribute not only to treatment, because actually we are only treating, that means we are at the receiving end, but they could also be contributing to prevention. That could go a long way in ensuring that most of these preventable deaths will not even occur, especially for those children who are yet to grow up and be the best that they can be in their life. So it goes beyond a plea to everyone that both donors, international community and philanthropics, that their contribution will do a lot to make sure that we can avert this catastrophe. Because unless everyone comes to terms with this, unless everyone acknowledges that it is an emergency, it's a crisis, we'll continue to use the mega resources, and this is not doing anything at all to change the situation. And I think it could yet get worse. It could yet get worse. And we call on everyone to contribute to make sure that we can avert or improve the situation for the children of Katsina and the Northwest as well. I think we all come out in this world with expectations. Parents are having children, and everyone having a child have the best dream. But the situations are beyond everyone, the context in terms of security, the climate situation, which is out of the control of everyone. So what we can say is it is a reality, which is not the making of anyone in particular, that we have this situation of malnutrition. To see parents sit by their children and worried about what they can eat tomorrow, and not even think about these children going to school to experiencing their potentials. So what we can do as MSF, we are more than just here to provide treatment. We are here also to witness on behalf of the population. on behalf of the situation that is occurring in the context and calling on everyone to come on board to make sure that we can help to save more lives as possible. And it's not just about saving lives. We need people to grow and to experience their full potential. And coming on board by everyone would do more than just treat people, but would do more than prevent malnutrition. And instead of worrying about what we could eat today or tomorrow, we would be thinking about realizing our own potentials for the children that we are bringing to the world. So this is a call to everyone that we're listening, that we could do more, and we are merely scratching the top of the iceberg. There is, for every 10 children we are treating, probably 100 more that will need yet more treatment and attention. And it's a call to everyone to come and support us to address this crisis. That's the closing statement. And I would also appreciate that we have this opportunity to talk to you and to make sure that some voices from the field can be heard by everyone.
Thank you so much for your time and your insights. We really, really appreciate this.
Thank you very much. We care, and we hope everyone else will care.